Welcome in to the David L. Gray Show, off code and unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. It's about 3:30 a.m. here in Germany, and we are streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, and X.com. We also have the audio platform. If you're listening to me on Spotify or iTunes, please leave that five-star review. I definitely appreciate it. Help with the algorithm. And go ahead and like and share this video as well. Tell more people see it. Appreciate you doing that as well. Again, this is David L. Gray Show, off code and unscripted. How many things do I have for you today, Hounds of Heaven? Me has two things for you today. Only two things. Not four, not five. Just the thing. Two things for you today, man. We're going to be talking about Pope Francis banning tattoos at the Vatican and applying a lot of other standards for employees at the Basilica. So I'm really excited about these new standards. We're going to talk about that. Let me know what you think about that story. Also, there's another story I want to get your thoughts on, see what you think about. There's been some news in the Protestant sphere, and also some Catholic news agencies have been making a big deal about news coming out of Germany that 4,000 Catholics have left the Catholic Church in 2023. So I want to add a little bit of context to that whole thing, you know, that I live here. I'm not an expert on the subject, right? But I have some insight about what's going on over here. And so, yeah, we got to talk about that. I have some interesting thoughts about that. I like to share with you to see what you think. So yeah, I think that's all I know about that. Hope you're doing well. Again, thanks for coming in. This is the David L. Gray Show. So let's go ahead and roll into it without further delay. Hello there. I am David L. Gray, the host of Off Code and Unscripted. I'm also the president and publisher of St. Dominic's Media. At stdominicsmedia.com, I would like you to hop over to our website today and take a look at everything we have to offer you there. And while you're there, I want you to become a member of our family. If you become a member of our family at just for $5 a month, I'm going to send you a gift. I'm going to send you a book of your choice from our collection as just a gift of you becoming a member of our family. And if you become a lifetime member, and I hope you do, you become a lifetime member, I'm going to send you every book we have ever published at St. Dominic's Media and every book we will publish in the future. And just for you helping our apostolate, becoming a member of our family, and just helping us carry out the mission that we have received, and that is to help people live their best liturgical life. So hop on over to St. Dominic's Media and see how much more you like us there. Thank you. So let me know what you think about this story, about these new rules at the Basilica at Vatican. So I guess we could really start by putting this whole thing in context. Let me know if you've been to the Vatican, if you've been to St. Peter's Basilica. It is, for people who measure these things, St. Peter's Basilica has the largest interior space of any Catholic church, right? It's not the tallest. It's not the widest. Tallest would probably still go to, I think, maybe Cologne in Germany, perhaps, as far as from what I recall. Probably the widest would go to the Catholic Church, the cathedral in Cote d'Ivoire, in Africa, maybe. So, but St. Peter's, it is a, and it's not the mother church of the Vatican, right? And that would go to the Lateran Basilica or Cathedral. That would be that. But Peter's Basilica is the St. John Lateran. Yeah, that would be that would go to that as far as like the mother church. But St. Peter's Basilica is considered one of the holiest Catholic shrines, obviously. According to tradition, what we believe as Catholics, St. Peter, the first pope, is buried there. His tomb lies directly under the high altar. Not many years ago, it was actually discovered there after some excavation or some renovations, right? We kind of forgot it was there. St. Peter's Basilica is the It was built, it started its construction. Actually, there was an original St. Peter's Basilica that was became old and decrepit, and this one that we see now replaced it. It began its construction in on April 18th, 1506. So, under the guidance of Pope Julius II, it was this designer had such prominent architects as Michelangelo, Carlo Maderno, Donato Bramante. So, it is one of the holiest shrines in Catholicism. It's just one of those places. If you do want to make a pilgrimage to the Vatican, I think it's just one of those places that you have to go to. All right. So, an interesting news came out over the weekend that the Vatican now has some standards for some employees who work there. And so I was surprised reading this because I was like, man, I thought this would already be the case. I was shocked that it wasn't already the case. So, if you're an employee at the Basilica now, there's some things that you're just not allowed to have. You cannot have tattoos or piercings that are visible. This wasn't, I don't think, anything to do with any sort of biblical standards or anything like that. It didn't have anything to do with like Leviticus. But I think it's just the Vatican just applying some basic standards. This is how you should look. This is how you should present yourself. They also made a rule about religious and moral conduct that a person employees at the Basilica, they have to make a commitment to the principles of exemplary religious and moral conduct that's required now, which includes not cohabitating outside of marriage. That's a standard now for people who work at the Basilica of St. Peter's. Church membership. You thought some of this stuff was just already in place, right? So, church membership, employees must be baptized and confirmed in the Catholic Church and have no criminal record, right? So, now I don't have any tattoos. Right? So I could still work at Basilica, but I can't work there. I have a criminal record, right? Church clergy endorsement, a letter from the parish priest testifying to the employee's good standing is necessary. So you have to have the letter of good standing, just like you're being going to be a sponsor or godparent. Confirmation sponsor or godparent, you have to have a letter of good standing from your parish. All right. Like, who would have thought this wasn't already the case? There's also an oath of fidelity. So you have to take a confidential oath as employee at a basilica. At hiring, employees must make a profession of faith or loyalty oath, promising to maintain confidentiality. All right, so of the papal secret. Media restrictions. Employees are banned from giving interviews without authorization from divulging information covered by the pontifical secrets. Workplace security. You're not allowed to invite outsiders into the workplace or remove documents from the archive. All that's prohibited. I like that when you're not allowed to invite outsiders into the workplace, right? So, like, they're sort of maintaining some standards there as far as who has access to what and when. Nepotism. This is interesting in light of our 2,000-year history of some of our popes and their love of nepotism. So, nepotism, hiring close blood relatives of current employees is barred without the cardinal's consent. So, whichever cardinal his basilica is, St. Peter's, he would have final approval over if you want to hire your cousin or your brother. All right. So, those are some of the new standards that are now in place for the employees who work at the Vatican. I just think this is pretty amazing. So let's talk about who these rules apply to, though. Like, who works at the Basilica? Well, it includes what they call artistic experts. It includes people like that. It includes architects, anyone doing any sort of renovation, maybe not contractors, but just the official architects, those who inspect and those who hire the people who are doing any sort of renovations at the Basilica. It includes laborers, just people who labor in the Vatican. These would be people who such as janitors, any sort of maintenance people, that type of thing. Additionally, these rules apply to no tattoos, no hiring your relatives, no going to, also you can't engage in any sort of political activity. You're not allowed to go to like gay pride parades, so-called LGBT parades in June. And thank God June is over in that regard, right? We love June as Catholics for the Sacred Heart of Jesus, but man, you just get tired of all of that crap, don't you? Glad that's over. But you can't go to that type of stuff either. That applies to presenting yourself as a good Catholic. So it applies to priests as well. And anyone who assisted any way in the liturgical and sacramental life of the church. So if you're a some sort of lector at St. Peter's Basilica, some sort of acolyte, some sort of usher, greeter, whatever, this applies to everyone who works at St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican in any form and fashion, probably not contractors though. So I really love this, right? But I'm surprised by it as well. I don't know if you are. Let me know if you're surprised by this, that I thought this would have already been a rule, right? Because these are just basic things we would apply to Catholic school teachers anywhere, right? You can't be living in some sort of cohabitation situation in adultery. That's just, I thought it was basic. Visible tattoos. I get that. I do. I think that's a standard that I've heard from some Catholic school principals. I remember I was getting hired for a job over in Belleville, Illinois at the Catholic school, Bishop Althoff Catholic School in Belleville, right? They were hiring me there. And I was meeting with the principal to teach theology, 9th and 12th grade. Same thing I had been hired to teach over in Columbus, Ohio, when I was there at Bishop Hartley High School. And we had moved before I can, accept that job or anything like that. Then we moved to Belleville. I was offered the same job there, 9th and 12th grade, teaching theology. And then I'm not taking it because they wanted me to work for free, basically. I had a master's degree at that time. I think they offered me in Columbus, Ohio. I think they offered me like $55,000 for a first year teacher. No, I was given credit for teaching previously at another school. But I think it's like $50, $55, something like that, maybe closer to $60. But then I get to Belleville, Illinois, right? They offer me it's like $32,000, maybe $31,000. It's basically working for free after taxes, right? So I just couldn't see myself working for free. I thought that was a weird offer. Right. So, but I remember speaking with the principal and he's talking to me about a lady he didn't hire to do Catholic development, to be their development, raise money and things like that. And he has said, yeah, I didn't hire her. She's great, but man, she had visible tattoos. So I think that's a standard some people have. I don't know. I don't like face tattoos. You have tattoos on your face and stuff like that. I think they look good on people, but man, that's like that's really permanent. And the thing about it is that if you allow face tattoos or visible tattoos anywhere, well, then you have to say, well, which ones will you allow? Like, we'll allow a rose, maybe a crucifix. But now we're not going to allow an upside down cross. We're not going to allow, the pride flag, things like that, So you have to get into picking and choosing what to allow. And so the Vatican is saying, no, we're just no visible tattoos. I think that used to be a standard in the military as well. But a lot of these are just basic standards for Catholic school teachers. So I was just wondering, when I was reading this story, I was kind of wondering, like, what happened? Usually when you see new rules put in place, it means something happened. Somebody did something that was... Because sometimes in a lot of places, there's already a culture in place that has just... People understand how to act. Like, the culture forms you into the culture. There's just a basic ethos that people just know how to move. People know what to say, know how to dress. These are just unspoken rules. Every culture has them. And strong cultures, they enforce them without words. When sometimes you get hired, you have a mentor. Your mentor will sort of tell you the culture. These are the things you do. These are the things you cannot do. That's just how it is. And so maybe this is already in place, that culture, but maybe the culture isn't strong anymore at the Vatican. Maybe it's, you know, it became loose. I'm just wondering who hired the guy, the transgender with a face tattoo. That's what I wonder. Who hired the transgender, the so-called transgender with a face tattoo, who they saw marching at the pre-LGBT parade in Rome? All right. Who hired the guy or the gal who showed up to work one day with like a pride pin? Right. I mean, something happened, right? Something happened. That's, hey, man, we have to write this stuff down. I know this stuff has been in the culture. It's been kind of communicated by the way, but yeah, we have to put this. And it's not like somebody can sue the Vatican. I mean, right? Where do you take that case at? Like, who do you submit that to? The Hague, right? So somebody's just like fired for, you know, just weird behavior, cohabitating. Well, who do you sue? Who do you appeal to? It's not like the United States. You could take this case. Oh, I was unjustly fired by the Catholic school, right? But I think it's good that there's some clarity here that the Vatican is making. And a matter of fact is that, you know, you mean, I talk about standards all the time. This is something you guys hear me talk about every year. I've had this, been on this YouTube platform since 2010, 2011. I always made a point of talking about standards, whatever it is, whether it was the Black American community has some standards, or Catholicism have some standards, right? Why? Because standards lead to success. Every strong family has standards. Every great sports team has standards. Think about the Patriots run with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. High standards at not just the game, but in practice. The Kansas City Football Chiefs football team now, just high standards with Patrick Mahomes and their coach Andy Reid. Just high standards. Think about the Bulls in the 80s with Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. Just high standards, right? Standards lead to success. You have to have bare minimums. Good parents give their kids standards. You have to, you know, you let your kids know that there's some things you will not accept, or there's going to be consequences. That's all that the Vatican is doing. Just these are the bare minimum standards. These are things that you cannot do if you want to be employed at the Vatican, right? You know, as a kid, I was thinking about this when I was reading a story. You know, as a kid, I remember my parents always giving me the bare minimum standards. The bare minimum standards. I don't think they were like too high, so I didn't get in too much trouble. Like, I think standards can be too high sometimes. They can stress kids out. You can have a bad life as a kid. You can hate your parents, right? I think sometimes our daughter here now, since she's like the only kid in the house, you know, she's like the only kid now, basically. And so she's like our sole focus. And I think sometimes she just like hates us, right? Because it's just like always. I guess it could be a lot for an only kid, right? But I don't think we have high standards, you know. Clean your room, clean the kitchen, don't get any C's, you know, just the basic stuff. I don't think we're terrible. But I remember that as a kid, I remember just having standards. But my best lesson about standards came from my grandmother, Minnie. And, you know, I was in high school, I was staying with her, you know, that I, and so you know, during school year, I'm staying with her to go to school. And, you know, the girls like me. I like the girls, right? I was a handsome kid. And wasn't having sex or anything like that. I didn't even know what sex was, you know. And, you know, I told my friends I was having it, but I didn't even know, you know, that's just what guys do. They lie. And, you know, and so, but, you know, so it wasn't anything like that. But, you know, I like the girls like me. And so my grandmother sits me down one day, you know, she's, you know, I'm over there on her couch, I'm on her chair, and, you know, she says, you know, Brock, you know, she called me Brock. I see these little, she says, I see these little fast buck girls coming by the house. And they're calling on the phone. And I saw some of them. And, you know, some of these girls who you chasing behind, who chasing behind you, she says, they're hoes. She said, these little fast butt hoe girls. She called them hoes. I didn't even know. I knew what a hoe was back then. She says, they're hoes. And she says, she tells me, and she says, and you should not involve yourself with a hoe, Brock, because what's going to happen? You're going to end up getting one of these hoes pregnant, and then you're going to have a child by a hoe. And your child's going to have a hoe as a mama. And then I'm going to have a grandchild who's hoes a mama. And she says, how does that make the Grays look in church? She's always concerned about the family day. It's like, how does that make the Grays look in church? And so, ever since then, she told me that. It's like, wow, there's a standard for girls? I didn't know that. Or I thought girls are girls. Right? So, but apparently there are some hoes out here who the Grays shouldn't be messing with. Right? Because we don't want any kids whose mama's a hoe, right? So I was just amazed by that. But I thought that was this amazing standard. I had no idea. But that standard sort of shaped me my whole life about the type of women I involve myself with. And it, for the most part, I don't think I follow my grandmother's advice. But, you know, as a guy, you just never know. Sometimes you think it's you. You don't know that it's every guy she likes, right? Sometimes, you know, you just think it's you. But yeah, so standards are important. And I love that the Vatican is now applying these standards to just Vatican employees. And let me get your comments, your thoughts on this, to see what you think about this story. Dominic Mars says something happened, like a big deposit at the Vatican Bank. Oh, that's interesting. I can see like situations where like reporters are fishing around with Basilica employees asking, hey, who did you see this cardinal speaking with? Who did you see the Pope speaking with? What did you hear today? Yeah, I can see that. 73 Brooks. Maybe they saw your video on standards the other day, right? You know, you're always surprised about who watches your videos. Have you guys seen that story that came out with Cardinal Zinn and some comments he had made about YouTuber Michael Lofton, which I thought was, I don't have any big beef with Michael Lofton. You know, I really don't. I do mess with him sometimes, right? Sometimes we'll talk back channel on Zoom or maybe email or something like that about something this and that. So I don't have a huge problem with him. Kyle Copey, you know, who's on this platform of St. Dominic's Media, he had Michael Lofton on his show. So, you know, we're okay with Michael Lofton. I thought Cardinal Zinn just popped off on him, on a YouTuber, saying you shouldn't listen to him. Like, you're wasting your time, perhaps even your money, you know. And he calls him a big guy with a little hair on his chin. He says, you know, he's speaking about theology, but is he a theologian? I just thought that was a Cardinal Zinn, like, listening to, like, a YouTuber. Like, he finds that entertaining, he says. I listen to him sometimes. You never know who listens, right? So, yeah, maybe. Dominic comes back. He says the Vatican is on the euro because of the Lateran Treaty with Italy, but the Vatican is not part of the EU. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So the Hague has no power. Absolutely. John says, so the Vatican is doing something I agree with. I'm shocked. Yeah. It's interesting, right? The whole, maybe I can put this whole thing and lump it into the Inquisition that we see with Cardinal Vigano. And I don't know what's going on at the Vatican. I don't know if it's Cardinal touch me with your lips Fernandez or what, but they seem to like care about standards now. Like, we have these bare minimum things you can't do, right? You know, you can't say the Pope's not the Pope. You can't have face tattoos. Just big stuff. And speaking of face tattoos, isn't that just like one of the worst decisions you can make? I don't know. You know, maybe there's somebody listening now with a face tattoo, right? But it just seems like, depending upon where the face tattoo's at, like on the neck, I'm not talking about visible, but I'm talking about just not even on the neck, that maybe comes up to the ear or anything like that. Maybe just like, just dead smacking your face, right? Just these tattoos on your face. Like, when I see you, the first thing I see is a tattoo. Isn't that like, I've never taken advice from people who have face tattoos, because they don't seem to have the capacity, at least in the past, to have made like really good decisions. Because I just think that's one of the worst decisions you can make. You just take yourself out of the game as far as like jobs, as far as maybe a potential spouse. You just sort of put yourself in a sort of niche. People who have face tattoos hang out with people who have face tattoos. You ever notice that? And have you ever noticed that people who have like crucifix tattoos are like some of the worst people in the world? Especially like the bigger your crucifix tattoo is, like if it's all up on your back, you've probably been in prison for 20 years and that's where you got it. Now, have you ever noticed that the people with crucifix tattoos are like not great people? I don't know. I'm sure that's not always the case, you know, but I think sometimes it's weird about tattoos. I don't have any tattoos. I'm not opposed to them. I just never found a tattoo that I want the FBI to know about. You know, like if something does happen, like it becomes like illegal to become a Catholic or something like that, and I have to like, or if I'm going to run for something, I just never want to be identified by a tattoo, you know, because you watch Law and Order, you watch these cop shows, and that's like the first thing they always say. Yeah, he has this tattoo. I just never wanted that on my record. But if I was going to get a tattoo, because I've thought about it, it would be like a tattoo. I was thinking about maybe a monstrance right here. And the center of the monstrance is here on my shoulder. And then the rays of the monstrance are going around my shoulder. You know, because I work out a lot. I think it has some nice arms. I think it has some nice guns. I think that would like accentuate the muscles of the arm. And boom, I could like show off, you know, the Holy Eucharist, maybe proclaim my faith. I don't know. If I was going to get a tattoo, it would be a monstrance, right? I don't know. So, but yeah, it's, I don't know. Lisa says, it's not really a good idea. Plus, when you get old, skin follows gravity. It changes everything. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen that. I've seen tattoos get bigger over time as well. Like, you used to have a tattoo of a lamb and, you know, you put on some weight and it looks like a whole sheep. I don't know. Like a whole goat. Then sometimes you have to get them colored in again. Seems like a relationship you have with ink after that. So yeah, but yeah, I'm happy the Vatican is going that route. So we'll see. So that's the end of that story. Let's get into the next one. This is the David O. Gray Show, Off Code and Unscripted. Hey, you guys are going to love this. We completely refurbished our merch store at Satan Downwix Media. So come over to Satan Downwix Media, hop over to merch and see what we have to offer you. We got some new stuff, but we still kept the old classic Rigid Catholic. I know you love it. A lot of you guys have it. You send me the pictures. I seen you in person with the Rigid Catholic. So it's a classic. It's not going anywhere, but we have it on some new things. We have it on shorts now. You get your Rigid Catholic shorts. It's hot outside. Put your shorts on, but let everybody know that you're a Rigid Catholic in shorts. Also, this is our new design. Now, you've heard What Would Jesus Do? WWJD. But the fact of the matter, there's a lot of things that Jesus would do that you can do. It's like dying for people's sins, right? That's what Jesus would do, but you can't do it. It's already been done. But what would Jesus not do? That's the question. What would Jesus not do? Because everything Jesus would not do, you can't do either. So get the merch. Put it on. Put it on shorts. Put it on a hoodie. Send me a picture when you do it. This is the new merch at St. Dominic's Media. We got more coming, but check out this for now. What would Jesus not do? And Rigid Catholic. Take a picture. Send it to me. I want to see it. I want to post it. StDominicsMedia.com. Get the merch. This is the David O. Gray Show, Off Code, Unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. Glad to have you here. All right, here's the, you know, I had two things for you, man. Two things today to keep it oddy. The other thing is, I want to talk about this story. I kind of always wanted to talk about since I lived here. I just never had a opportunity to really talk about it. Because typically when I do podcasts, you know, there's a new story that's like, I'm excited to talk about. But I wanted to get this in because I did see a news story coming over from the Catholic news agency, and I also saw this story on some Protestant sources about there's been some reporting out of Germany from the bishops here talking about how 4,000 Catholics are reported from having unregistered as Catholics. From the church tax, the German church tax, they've unregistered and said, we're not going to pay this. 400,000 Catholics. And I was looking over at the article over at the Catholic news agency, and reasons they had reported over there for saying, yeah, this is the reason why, these are reasons why Catholics are leaving the Catholic church. I just thought were horrible. I thought they were a little bit lazy. I thought they were looking at the issue from a distance, and not really speaking really to the culture of what's really going on over here in Germany. And so the reasons why they said in their article or CNA, another Protestant source, think Christian Post or something like that, they were saying that the reasons why Germans are leaving a church is because of the church handling of abuse. Older people cite the church's handling of abuse crisis as a reason for leaving. And they say the second reason that Germans are leaving the Catholic Church is because of the church's tax obligation. They say younger people point to the obligation of paying church tax. I thought those are both weird reasons. The CNA article also is trying to link this whole thing to the Synod on synodality. That freaking fly. Linking the whole thing to the Synod on synodality. And I thought that was, it really didn't really speak to, I think what's going on. So I want to talk about that. So they reported that 400,000 Catholics have unregistered in 2023. And the interesting thing about that I think a lot of people are missing in this whole story, is that the number is about the same as the number of Germans who have unregistered from the Protestant church. And the Catholic church and the Protestant church here, or churches, they have about the same number of members, around 23 million registered members. And so they're about the same, and they lost about the same amount. Now, the church tax itself, we should, you know, talk about that. So the German church tax or Kirchtax is, it depends upon your state, where you're at. It is an income tax, depending upon where you live. It's going to be sometimes 8%, but I know like in Bavaria, I think it's like 9%. So it just depends where you live, but it's going to be somewhere between 8% and 9%. All right. So it is a significant portion of your income. Who's taxed? Well, the Catholic Church is taxed. If you're registered, rather, as a Catholic, something that you would do at birth or later on in life, you're basically saying 8%, 9% of my income will go to the Catholic Church. Now, for the maintenance of what? For the maintenance of buildings, for the payment of the salaries of priests, for any of their administrative expenses associated with the church. So it will go to headquarters with of the region of the state, and they would dispense it to their local churches, whatever. So it is an upkeep, it is administration. Now, what can you register as? You can't register as every religion in Germany. Like, you can't go tell the state, hey, I want 10%, 9% of my money to go to the Wiccans. It's not like that. There's a set number of state churches or state religions that they recognize. So there's not, there's not really that separation of church and states in a sense. The church, the state recognizes particular religions. So there's the Catholic churches or the Catholic Church. There's Protestant churches, or, you know, they would be lumped together as far as your main line, your Lutheran, your Anglican, some of your mainline churches, your Presbyterian. And then there's your third group would be your old Catholic Church. So they're not, the schismatic group is not lumped in with a Catholic Church. So then your 8%, you can also tell the state that you're a Jew. So 8%, 9% of your income will go to Jewish religious communities. You can say that you're an Israelite. So there's Jews and there's those who, you know, you're Ashkenazi Jews. You know, you're actually, your DNA is more from Samaria, right? That whole thing. And then you're more of an Israelite Jew. That's a different distinction. So there's them. There's also what's called free religious communities. There's the Reformed Church of France that has, you know, a decent population up in the tens of thousands here in Germany, mainly in Berlin, right? The Mennonites, you'll find your Mennonites here in Hamburg. You'll find them. Also, I think you'll find them in Strasbourg. You'll find them there. If you're from Western Ohio or you're from Minnesota, you would notice, and you came here to Germany, you would notice that the dialect that they use in places like Strasbourg, Hamburg, that it just sounds like your Mennonites and your Amish, because that's where they would come from. They're your Unitarian religious communities. They're here in my state where I live at, and in Rhineland. That's who gets it. Now, the Catholic Church is unique in a sense, and this is where I think is a little bit demonic. I'm amazed that the Catholic Church had the headquarters, that the popes have never done anything about this, because this, I think, is like flatly demonic. That, did you know that if you're a Catholic, you're one of these 400,000 Catholics who have unregistered as a Catholic, and you're saying, I'm no longer going to pay the church my 8%, 9% tax. Did you know that when you do that, the church excommunicates you? They excommunicate you. Because you're not paying your church tax anymore. I find that to be demonic. And like, I think there's like just canonical issues with that, let alone scriptural issues and just dogmatic issues. So I'm surprised that no one has done anything about that. Because once you're excommunicated, it means you do not have access to the sacraments. Like, your children may not have access to the sacraments. You cannot be a godparent. You cannot get married in the church. You can't go to confession. You can't receive last rites. All these things. because you unregistered yourself from having income, 10%, 8%, 9% of your income taken directly out of your check and sent to your diocese. And so do they check? No, there's no check before you come up and receive Holy Communion. There's no check before you go to the sacrament of penance and reconciliation, right? There's not a person outside the confession booth saying, hey, you know, let me look at the register, like, let me see your papers, you know. There's nothing like that. But for things such as baptism, confirmation, funerals, burials, holy orders, that's a marriage, all those things, yes, there would be some lady or whatever in the parish office checking the file, checking your papers to see if you are registered as a Catholic. So I think that's flatly demonic. I really do. But I want to talk about also about why. So why are Germans leaving the Catholic Church? Well, I already told you that. Well, they're leaving in equal numbers to the Protestant Church. So this is not a Catholic issue. This is not some sort of synodal issue. It's not. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the liturgy, nothing to do with Vatican II or the Freemasons, right? I think those are like really easy takes. And I recognize that Germany has become something like an easy thing, like to point your finger to, not just for Americans, but for everyone, Australians, Irish, Africans, whatever. Germany is just like so transparent with their issues, with their synodal way, their bishops who do weird things, and just historically, just Germans doing weird things. Right, just historically, right? A lot of problems, a lot of great things come from here. A lot of great aspects of the culture, pianos, cars, bread, Roshan. You know, they have, you know, liturgy itself with Charlemagne and the Carolingian kings, how they could be given a credit for making the Roman Rite more popular. Because when they had their whole Christendom, they went to Rome and they asked the Pope, hey, send us your liturgy. And the Pope sent them, and he also sent them some relics and some things like that, and they reformed the whole liturgy. They were the first ones to reform the Roman Rite. So, but their rite is part of what's called the Carolingian family of rites, which is different from your Gallican and things like that. But yeah, so there's a lot of great things that's come out of Germany, but it's also a very weird place. And when it's come with their bishops and their synodal way, the gay things that they do here, everyone says, you know, it's just an example of the whole world of just Catholicism on decline, just bad Catholicism. No matter how bad this stuff is going on in your diocese, everyone, every Catholic in the world is always able to point to Germany and say, ah, but look at them. This like when we speak of standards, Germany's just like you know, they're not meeting standards, we would say. Like, there's us. But look at Germany. I don't think Germany is any worse than any other place. Yes, a lot of Catholics have unregistered, but who has registration? Not a lot of people. I think a lot of people leave the Catholic Church all around the world, in the States, whatever. And we just don't know. They just don't show up. There's no official documentation, right? So I would like to see, right, how these numbers compare with some places in the United States. I would like to see that. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it's not something similar per capita, right? Also, yeah, I think there's a lot of options of churches in Germany. Like when you go to Cologne, there's like a Catholic church in every corner. So I kind of see why they're empty. You just have a lot of options. Last time I was in Cologne, I didn't go to the cathedral, right? It's kind of crowded. You don't know who's Catholic there. Sometimes a lot of tourists. So I went to a Dominican church. Yeah, there are maybe 18 people there on a Sunday morning. The church wasn't even that big, so it didn't look like it was completely empty. But there's just a lot of options. There's a lot of places you can go to. Not every church has been turned into a museum like you see somewhere like in Florence, right? A lot of churches there. A lot of them are museums. But But then you look at some places like Chicago, St. Louis, all this church consolidation, Detroit, you know, they're just consolidating churches. I think if they did not consolidate, we would also see a lot of empty churches. We would see low church attendance as well, because there's more churches. Gay bishops, right? I think Supage, Stowe, Tobin, Gregory, you could put them on even par with a lot of with the German bishops, and it's some of the German cardinals. I think they're just as gay. So I don't think Germany's like a rare case. They're just open about what they're doing. Yeah, the synodal way. God bless the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops for not really getting on board with that whole thing yet. They really don't really push it, if you notice. The delegation they sent to the Vatican for the synod on the synod was, you know, pretty conservative by some standards. The people who Pope Francis selected were very gay. So, but you know, there would be more bishops, and we know this for a fact, that there are bishops who are on board with making the church in the States more synodal. So I don't think we can really point to Germany as, I just think that's a false boogeyman. I really do. I think it's an easy target. Because everything that's going on here is also going on everywhere else. The Germans are just more transparent about what's going on. And that's just, I think it's part of the German culture. Germans are just too honest. They are. One thing I hate about it here, they're just too honest. This is the only place I've ever been to. When you go to a restaurant and you want to order something, and the waitress will tell you, nah, you don't want to order that. That's not good. Wait, this is your restaurant. Why is something not good on the menu? Right? Or you order a drink and you want this or that in it. Sometimes I order my drinks. I want different things in my drink that's not on the menu. Oh yeah. Can you put this in there? Can you put some vodka in here? Or can you add this? Can you put, you know, do the wine and cola thing that, which I learned here, which everyone doesn't serve. And they look at you like it's always on the German face. Their look of disappointment and judgment is just always right here. It's like a face tattoo. They always give you this look like, what you're doing like doesn't meet their approval. They're just too honest here. I went to a German dentist one time, and I don't have a crooked smile. I know my teeth aren't completely straight. Fine. But you know, just the judgment from the dentist when I went in there. Like, I'm 52 years old, right? My teeth look like a 52-year-old person who never had cosmetic work done on their teeth, right? I don't need all that judgment on your face and even words, right? Right? They're just too honest. They are, right? Only place you don't see judgment really, like in the bathhouses, when you go to the bathhouses and the saunas, right? Everybody's walking around in their Adam and Eve suits, right? There's no judgment there. Thanks be to God, right? for some people, but yeah. So I think that's the difference. I think Germans are just honest and open about what's going on. But let's talk about why. So why are people leaving the Protestant church? Why are people leaving the Catholic church at equal numbers? And all the religions, you know, the old Catholic church and the free religious communities, they don't really report. But I'm sure the percentage is still the same of people leaving. Still probably around 6% or whatever a year. And the number of the Catholic Church has actually decreased from 2022. So the bishops were happy to report that. Oh, it's not as bad as it was the year before. But why are they leaving? What's the real reasons? If it's not the sex abuse, if it's not really the church tax, it's not the church tax. Germans don't mind paying taxes. They pay over 50% taxes anyway. They don't care about taxes. And the reason why they don't care about taxes is because they see the benefit of paying taxes. They see if they're allowed to go to college, which most of them aren't even allowed to try to go to college, which I think is also weird. I really don't like the caste system in Germany. It's really just a caste system. You know, by the time you graduate from high school, what's your station in life? You're going to be white collar or blue collar, so to speak. If you're going to be a doctor or a janitor or whatever. You know that by the time you leave high school, and you know that by the way you test it.
The government tells you you didn't test well enough to go to college, so we're not going to pay for you to go to college. And so, but I don't like the caste system. I think it's horrible. But the Germans do see the benefit in paying taxes, because if they are allowed to go to college, or they're allowed to go get training, the government essentially pays for the whole thing. There's some sort of copay. It's really small, but they see the benefit. The healthcare system, essentially free. They see the benefit. The roads are always in great condition. There's always two police in every police car that you see. Always a man and a woman. So they see the benefit of paying taxes. Their water is just so clean. I tested it when I got here. You know, I did my alkaline test. I like for my water to have high alkaline. Back in Illinois, when I was living in Illinois, around St. Louis, I had to go, you know, buy the Fiji water or get water from Amazon, because water was horrible. But here, I got over here, tested it. It's like, it's better than Fiji water. It's like over 8%. It just has so much alkaline in it. It's amazing. Germans, when they pay their taxes, they see the benefit. Which has a lot to say about the church tax, which is, again, the mnemonic aspect of this whole thing. For whatever reason, and we'll get into some of the reasons, they do not see the benefit in paying taxes to the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church. But let's stick with the Catholic Church, because that's significant. That's saying something. Because the German people are saying, or a small percentage of them are saying, that we do not see the benefit in the sacraments. They're unregistering, knowing that they won't have access to confirmation, marriage, all the sacraments where they're going to check to see. Maybe some of them say, oh, well, if I want to get married in the church, I'll get registered at that time. Maybe. But it's interesting that this is what they're saying. That I don't need access to the sacraments. I'm okay with being excommunicated. Maybe some of them who live closer to other borders, whether it's north, you know, whether it's Sweden or something like that, or, you know, closer to France or Poland or Luxembourg or something like that. Maybe they said, oh, well, I'll just go across the border and go to church there. Maybe there's some of those, not many. But the vast majority are saying that I don't need access to the sacraments. So why is that? Because that's the real reason people are unregistering from the Catholic Church in Germany. They're saying, I don't need to have access to the sacraments. And why is that? Well, again, I think some of it will go back to just the whole socialism thing and the caste structure that they have here. If the government is saying here that we'll take care of you, we'll provide everything that you need, and this country has become very secular, and secularism is basically saying that you don't need God, you just need a government, you need yourself. If that has become more the culture here than Christianity, if the culture has become completely secular, then that's what people are going to do. They're going to trust the government to take care of them, their education, their food, their healthcare. There's a saying here in Germany that you have to try to be homeless. You have to actually try to be homeless. Or that if you're homeless, it's actually your fault. Because the German people don't put people on the street. The government will pay for a decent house or apartment, even as like a single man. You don't even have the family. I have a family. I remember back in Ohio, I don't know if this is every state, but back in Ohio, there was something called Section 8. It was like a housing lottery. So every county will have a lottery every year that you apply for, and maybe the government will give you what's called Section 8. And Section 8 means that the government will pay for all or most of your, up to a certain percent of your housing cost. Nothing like that here, Germany. There's no lottery. If you're out of work, if you've been out of work for a while, the government will pay for your housing and your utilities and give you some sort of stipend, maybe even a thousand euros for a single person. So if you're homeless in Germany, it's really your fault. But again, this is what people pay taxes for. They see the benefit. They don't see the benefit in the sacraments, which is demonic, which is sad. So that's the first reason why Germans are leaving the Catholic Church. They don't see the benefit in the sacraments. They're fine with being excommunicated. Here's the second reason why I observe why Germans are leaving the Catholic Church. It's the culture. And I talk about this a lot. That people always want to blame things like Vatican II, the Freemasons, the synodality, the liturgy. It was a Novus Ordo. That's why people, it's the new mass why people are leaving the Catholic Church. No, it's not liturgy. It's not Vatican II. It's not Freemasons. It's culture. They're just cultures that are more compatible with Catholicism than others. And it's obvious. Cultures that are more compatible with Catholicism, we see it in their seminaries. In Germany, seminaries are largely empty. Nigeria, they're full. It's the culture. We see it in families. Here in Germany, you're lucky to see a family with two kids. Five? Get out of here. Nigeria, big families for now. It's culture. It's not liturgy. It's culture. Some cultures are just more compatible with Catholicism. Basic building blocks of every society, two-parent home, Christian morality, right? And opportunity to work, right? These are just some basic building blocks of every society. Also throw in education. Two-parent home, education, Christian values, and opportunity to work. If you have those four things, you have a healthy culture, right? They're just the basic building blocks. People who are married and stay married just do better than other people, right? And we see that in more so in places like Nigeria, very low divorce rate. Germany, you'd be surprised. The divorce is very hard to get divorced here, but it's a lot of divorces in small families. The culture just isn't really compatible with Catholicism anymore. It's a culture where people believe the government will take care of you. The church wants you to believe that it's Jesus Christ and his sacraments. Okay. So it's culture. And there's another aspect of the culture that I think is very unique to Germany, which I've observed, is that I think really to embrace Catholicism as a German, you just have to be able to do some reconciliation of German history. And you have to be able to just come to grips with just certain things of your history and some of the things that your culture was good at and they should be given credit for. And I think the problem in Germany here is the only time that there's national pride is during, like now during the Euros, like when there's soccer going on every 2 years, you see a lot of German flags flying everywhere on everything. That's the only time that you see national pride. That's largely the only time that you see the national flag being flown. Otherwise, the German belief is that if you're wearing or if you're flying the German flag outside your house, you're a Nazi. You have too much pride as being a German. What? Why are you proud to be a German? Look at what we've done. So there is a part of the culture here in Germany that's very ashamed to be German. They don't want to be German. A lot of them just want to be European. They want to join a European and turn this country, Germany, into a state. And so it's a bit sad, right? But when you have like a very old country like this, there's just a lot of baggage. And when the baggage is like Germany's, you know, you kind of see why you run into German people over here sometimes. And they'll apologize to you. They say, you know, we're really sorry about World War II. We're really sorry about, you know, what happened. We're really sorry about what we've done. There's still like this baggage that they carry that they don't need to carry because most of them weren't alive. But they carry this baggage. Sort of like German guilt, you know, white guilt in the United States. You know, people try to make all so-called white people feel bad about slavery. There's like this German guilt that they walk around with. And because they have this German guilt, they can't have national pride. And because they can't have national pride, they can't be Catholic. Because to be Catholic in Germany is to be connected with all these old cathedrals. There's no new churches in Germany. These cathedrals are old as dirt, right? And so just to walk into these churches and understand they've been around for hundreds of years is to accept the fact that, yeah, you're German and you're connected to this history. But the German mind is saying, well, that history is bad. We've done bad things. We have this guilt. And so, there's that tension and that rub that I don't think a lot of people get who don't live here. And that's why younger people who are very anti-Nazi, I noticed, they have these anti-Nazi rallies that, you know, the young people go to. Which is interesting because, you know, Eastern Germany or Northeast Germany, you know, around Berlin, Bavaria, you know, the Nazi party is growing. I think they won a large number of seats in the last European election. They have more seats now than the one of the Democratic parties, not the Christian Democrats, the other Democrats. They have like more, they won more seats than them. So the Nazi party is growing. But also you have these. You know, a lot of younger people are anti-Nazi. You know, you go to a concert over here and they have a sign like no Nazis allowed, that whole thing. So it's and I really don't know the fix for it. I don't know how we can like restore pride in like a people's history as Catholics. And have them learn to appreciate all their contributions that Germany has done for the Catholic culture. And that they should take pride in that culture. Like, to be German is to be Catholic, is what I would say. To be German really is to be anti-Martin Luther and everything that he'd done to really, and the German princes, everything they'd done in their dispute with Rome to destroy the Christian culture here in Germany. So it's, you know, that's what I would say, that there's a demonic aspect of it, that people believe they don't need the sacraments because the government is enough. And then there's that other aspect of culture and this new culture that is ashamed of their history. So that's why people leave the German Catholic Church. It's not the synod. It's not the liturgy. It's not Vatican II. It's not the Freemasons. It's not taxes. They love paying taxes. They just don't see the benefit of paying taxes to the diocese. So let me get your thoughts and we'll get out of here. Hey, some good comments here. Let me get into this. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate your donation, man. You guys love me so much. I appreciate that, man. Appreciate that. In our last segment, I want to get to this one. Ed says, I wish he would give a total tattoo man. That'd be something I'd get behind. Hey, let me put a quick timestamp here so I get know when the comments begin. Give me 1 second. This is the David L. Gray Show on St. Dominic's Media. Let me get into your comments on the show, on this segment, about why I see my observation of living here in Germany for the past couple of years, why, in speaking to a lot of Germans about this issue, why it seems that they are leaving the Catholic Church. And here are your comments. Daniel says, every Catholic church I ever went to, the sermon was very worldly. So I followed that worldly way and now no longer practice Catholicism. And Daniel, you know, we pray for you. Really, do everyone say a prayer for Daniel? Because I don't think that is a substantive reason to ever leave the Catholic Church, because we are not Catholics because of preaching. We're Catholics because of the Holy Eucharist, because it's Jesus Christ Church, because the Catholic Church is a gift that God has given to us, and we don't abandon our gift, nor do we abandon Jesus, the Holy Eucharist, and be like Judas. So bad preaching, bad music, bad ambiance, none of those ethereal reasons are why we leave the Catholic Church. The homily isn't even required, at least during daily mass. It's strongly suggested during a Sunday mass. So we cannot leave the Catholic Church because of a homily. But we do make reparations for the things that you heard, why it was so worldly. And we do make reparations for that. And we do apologize for that. But we do invite you to come back home. And definitely learn what the Catholic Church teaches about why God has called you to communion as a Catholic. And, we invite you to learn more, experience more of the Holy Eucharist. It truly is Jesus Christ. It truly is. Without a doubt. And he wants you to receive him worthily. The Catholic Church is the only place on the face of this earth. People say, well, where's God? Where can I see Jesus? He's just his historical figure. The Catholic Church is the only place on earth. Or if you want to see Jesus, you just got to come to a Catholic Mass. He's right there being lifted up once again. So come see Jesus. Come commune with him. He wants that for you. He created you for that, for communion with him. So come to communion. And if you hear another bad homily, just put your earplugs in. It's not required. How about that? So we love you. We pray for you, Daniel. Dominic says, if that many people are opting out of the Catholic Church in Germany, that means there will be less Euros will be going to Rome, less German influence in the Vatican. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, these dioceses do pay a percentage to, listen, despite the fact that a small percentage of Germans are leaving the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches and all these places, the German church is flush with money. Always have been flush with art, investments, properties. But as far as money coming in, yeah, that does say something. I think the Vatican would be interested in this whole thing. Yeah, it is wrong, Lisa. It is wrong. You should not be excommunicated because you don't pay your tithes. Yeah, this is a type of corruption, isn't it? It's sort of like extortion. Like, we won't give you sacraments unless you pay your offering. And it's crushing the poor. That's a great point. On people who are not on German welfare, because I don't think a 10% of what the government gives you will go to the church. But I think you still stay registered. I think maybe there's some sort of exemption for those type of people. I have to look into that. But if you're not on the German welfare, you just have just a regular job. You're doing your best. You're working at a Netto. You're working at a bread shop. You know, just a regular wage. But you know, they want to take 10% of that and send it to the church. And you know, where does that come from? That comes out of money you could take your kids to go to the water park, or that 10% is a lot for poor people. We have to accept that. And people should be able to, it's a teaching of the church, it's a tenet of the church, that we should make an offering, that it's required that we contribute to the church in some way. For some people, that's financial. In other places of the world, that's bringing a church, one of your sheeps or something like that. Maybe it's your time, but you do have to make an offering. So that is a precept. But for the German church or the German government, whoever is saying it, that it has to be this 8%, 9% of your income. And that's wrong on so many levels. I mean, we could go in that in so many different ways, how that could affect people's their psychology. And because the offering, you know, the offering rites in the church, you know, this thing about people giving money, I didn't even know that happened until around like the 8th century, around 700s. And it started at really just papal masses. And then somehow it went down into just the local churches, this offering thing. So it's not very old in the Catholic context, but it's old. But it's not something we've done since the beginning. But theologically, we've always had the offering rite, so to speak, not with money, but with the sorsum coda. In a sorsum coda, the priest says, lift up your hearts. You know, he's saying, lift up everything that God has given you. Lift up your total essence, your being, because everything you have, God, you have has come from God. So lift that up. Lift up your treasure. And you know, we respond that, we lift it up to the Lord. So the offering rite has always been there, but it's been more in a theological and a spiritual sense, because we recognize that we ourselves are an offering to God. So it's the whole mind, body, and soul is what we have to offer God. Later on, it became sort of monetary. And so I think this affects people's psychology. They think if they go to the church and they offer money, oh, they've made an offering. There's a detachment from offering up your mind, body, and soul, from offering some money to the church and put it in a basket. That's not really a true offering. Maybe for some people it is, but I think the mentality of the world today is that we aren't well enough to think that, well, because if that was true, I think we would offer more money, probably. You know, Catholics of all religions, I think we offer the less in an offering tray. I see it here in our church community, because I get the numbers from, you know, our accounting office, because we have a shared chapel. I see how much money the Protestant offers at their church service. And then I see how much we've collected. It's not even close. And we're talking about, we have three masses at our church community, maybe altogether, maybe 1,000 people, maybe 800, depending upon the season. Protestants, maybe 100, maybe 200 at just one service, right? But they've offered triple, sometimes quadruple, right? So Catholics, we don't even offer a whole lot of money, to be honest. And I just don't think we get the theology of our true offering is ourself, right? So, but even here in Germany, it's worse, because you're offering something out of your income directly. The government is taking it out of your income directly. That's your offering. So what do you do when you get the mass? I mean, that's it's just, I think it's a bad system. Yeah. Yeah. How can, yeah, from a civil procedure. That's amazing. How can you be excommunicated? Yep. Mr. Noyes said, I've been saying that also for years. Blaming Vatican II and the liturgy is low-hanging fruit for the rad trad like Taylor Marshall who pushed that narrative. They are clueless in a wider context. Michael Matt of the Remnant just made like a 2-hour video blaming Vatican II on everything. I think it's a very myopic thing. And it doesn't like take the rest of the world into consideration, where Catholicism is doing well because the culture is well, or as well as it can be, or more compatible with the church. Yeah, we should be looking in our own backyard at this time, right? Instead of thinking it's Germany. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I always like that. Yeah, the Senate on synodality. We should be getting some documents, some draft documents coming out soon. So it's gonna be interesting. What they've come up with. Lisa, I think it was because there was a time period of cults of personality and people became disillusioned. Big one to hear a priest really preach on the gospel, not some weird story. Yeah. Don't you think priests sometimes make homilies too difficult? They think they have to come up with the context and meet themselves, and they try really hard to write these homilies that they think will help us or maybe even entertain us. They overcomplicate writing a homily because it's not that hard. Only thing you have to write about or speak about in your homily, just what the church teaches. Every homily, every Sunday, you could talk about the sacraments. You could talk about the Holy Eucharist. You just spend 5 minutes saying how these readings relate to the Holy Eucharist. You can talk about confession more often. You could talk about, it's not that hard. Just relate the scriptures to the sacraments in the Holy Eucharist and the liturgy, and you could be done. We don't need a cute anecdote. A cute story about a dog and a cat, you know, old Sally Sue who did this. We don't need that. We don't need you to really relate to us. Just show us Jesus. That's it. And people will be satisfied. Post-Vatican II, Mennonoi Faith says we traded in the proclamation with social justice as the main narrative. Yeah, you see that in a lot of churches, right? They do a really good job going out, doing all the social justice stuff. They treat the church as like it's some sort of civil service agency. You see that. I think that's good, but we're missing something there. Lise asks, David, would there be a problem with the economy and feeling like they can't afford the basics? Yeah, I wonder about that. Like, I speak to Germans about that sometime because they do get concerned now. A lot of German people do get concerned because of the influx of immigrants to this country from the Middle East, from Africa. And those people, even though they're contained usually to the larger cities, they do see them as sort of draining the German wealth. And so they do wonder how that will affect them So same stuff that's going on in the States sort of goes on here. But I think in the States, I think we treat the immigrants better than we treat our own citizens, right? We don't give our own citizens debit cards with money on it. You know, it's just weird. But yeah, I don't think you can take it away, the welfare system for Germans. It's a crush that they have. I think it's a good net. I think I like it in a sense. It's just sad that it's gotten to the point. I think this is what all socialism eventually leads to, is that there's a replacement of church with state. Poor people, I think when you're poor, it's easier to trust God. In German people, they never really have an opportunity to become poor. And so they never realize, oh man, I really need God for this. When you can always go to the government for that. You know, I don't know what you do. I really don't know the balance between the two, between socialism and still realizing that it's God. You know, I don't know. Maybe the German tax was originally that idea. Then, yeah, we're going to take care of you, but you also need to take care of the church. So we're going to take money out of there. But now it's sort of, over time, it's sort of devolved into a different understanding. Maybe it's weird, right? I don't know how to fix something like that. Yeah, it is population control, right? The demise of the family. It's all devil's work, right? But again, it's weird here in Germany, right? They will say the narrative, I think sometimes, is that, well, once women are allowed to be educated, they stop having children. I don't think that's the case here in Germany. I mean, most people don't go to college, right? And most people don't go to college, right? There's not a big, you know, educational quotient here, so to speak. But still fewer children. Yeah, they don't have to worry about having more children because the government is going to help you. So why not have more children? I don't know. The first manicure, Manticore. In the U.S., you can own a house and a car and still be below the poverty line. Yeah. The poverty line is a funny thing, though, right? Right. Because our poverty line, I don't know what it is anymore, but I think it used to be like 18,500 or something like that. That's like wealthy in a lot of countries. Right. So I think the poverty line is kind of like it's interesting. What counts as poor in the United States. All right, my friends, we're approaching the 90-minute mark. That was 60 minutes for me, 30 minutes for you, for your comments. That's what we usually do. I appreciate your time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm glad you liked this show. And I will see you tomorrow. Tomorrow, Christine Harrington will be here. We're going to be speaking about the debate, a little bit about that, a little bit about Donald Trump and the debate being all on board with the abortion pill. We're going to talk about just some political issues that we think are interesting, because a lot of Catholics are still trying to negotiate this whole thing. Like, yes, Joe Biden is the devil. The Democrats work for Satan, right? But how can we hold these Republicans accountable and let them know that we're not for these exceptions. We're not for any of this pro-death stuff. Like, we don't want to become like black liberals, right? They accept anything from the Democrats. They have for 80 years. Every four cycle, the Democrats tell the culturally black Americans in the cities, hey, we're going to do this for you. 4 years later, they still haven't done it. And the cultural Black Americans in the cities, especially the women, they still vote for these Democrats year after year. We don't want to become that people to the Republicans. We don't want the Republicans to take us for granted. Like, oh, yeah, we really don't have to be pro-life for these Catholics because they'll still vote for us anyway. Da-da-da-da-da. So yeah, I recognize that a lot of Catholics are going to vote for Trump for some obvious reasons. But moving forward, we just have to figure out our pro-life movement is trash. They're too on board with the Republicans. They're not holding them accountable. They're not giving us anything. So we have to figure this out. So we're going to talk to Christine about the whole thing. So look forward to seeing you tomorrow on the David L. Gray Show on St. Dominic's Media. Until then, until next time, remember, Jesus loves you and is there for you. And blessings and shalom to you and to yours. Thanks for coming. God bless.